Hi, everyone. Welcome to another exciting episode of Bloomberg Intelligence Tech Disruptors podcast. My name is Anurag Rana, and I'm a technology analyst at Bloomberg Intelligence, which is Bloomberg's in-house research arm. We're delighted to have David Wadhwani, who's the president of Adobe's digital media business, with us today. You know, I often tell investors that if I were to get on a spaceship and come back to Earth 10 years later, I'm not sure which software product will be around, but I feel very confident that there will be Microsoft Excel, Adobe Photoshop, and Adobe PDF. And David sees two of those three products. So David, welcome to the show. To kick it off, can we please start with your background and your current role at Adobe?
Thanks for having me, Anurag. My background is I'm president of digital media at Adobe. That includes the creative products that we have and the document products that we have. So things like Photoshop and Acrobat, to your point. I've actually been at Adobe for a long time. I used to work at a company called Macromedia. I don't know if you remember Macromedia from back in the day, but I worked at Macromedia for a number of years, came through to Adobe through that acquisition, and was here for about 14 years. I took a four-year walk in the woods and was the CEO of a company called AppDynamics. Then I went and I invested with Greylock Partners, continue to be a venture partner there. And I came back to Adobe about 2.5 years ago, and it's been quite a ride.
Oh, that's so funny. I was just talking to my colleagues that when I first started into the research business, one of my first notes in software was to look at Adobe's acquisition of Macromedia a little over, I think, over 20 years ago or something like that at this point, right? Right. All right. So let us start with some basic questions about Creative Cloud. Now, this is the crown jewel of Adobe and generates roughly $13 billion in annual recurring revenue, or ARR, with about double-digit growth right now. Now, you guys see the total addressable market of this business to be about $63 billion as of the last investor meeting, and I'm sure it's going to go up with Gen AI. But I wanted to talk about the market in two different perspectives. First is, how do you think of the total addressable market in terms of subscribers? Now, how big is the market in terms of the serious graphic designers? How penetrated is Adobe in there? And then the second one, which is getting really big at this point, is how big is the market for hobbyists and creators? And how far are we in that journey?
Yeah, those are things, obviously, that we spend a lot of time thinking about, looking at the market. Let's exactly to the point that you had. Let's break it into those two contexts. First of all, for professionals, we really focus our flagship applications on power and precision. And of course, professionals use that, but so do communicators that are, think of them as, people that are participating in the creator economy that want to really create content that stand out with a lot of power and precision. And in that context, we see just a massive increase in the amount of content being generated every year. And in fact, we're projecting that over the next couple of years, we think that content will probably grow about 5x. And that really drives a lot of growth, both in the core creative community, with more creative professionals coming in every year, working for large companies, mid-sized companies, agencies, and also individual consultants that are supporting small, medium businesses. So that continues to be a large growth vector for us. But the other thing with the power and precision of things like Photoshop and Illustrator, Premiere, After Effects, is that we see a lot of influencers, we see a lot of small, medium business owners wanting the full power and precision of our pro tools that are coming into. So that base continues to grow, and it's doing exactly what you would think. It's growing based on the need for building content that stands out in a very complicated and saturated digital landscape. On the communicator side, we're seeing incredible growth, and I think AI in particular, generative AI in particular, is a huge unlock for us. We've been able to tap into that market in a couple of ways. The first way was by bringing generative AI and our Firefly services, and I think we'll talk more about that later, into Photoshop, which actually makes Photoshop a lot easier to onboard into and get started with and use. So we've seen more people coming in and using Photoshop than ever before. But we also introduced Adobe Express, which is what we call really focused on speed and ease for the broader market. That has been sort of the way we grab and bring people into more of a freemium model for creating an expression. But Adobe has always had a mission of creativity for all. And this really has been a point of acceleration, both in terms of the demand that people have for creating more content, and also that the fact that it's getting easier. So we're really excited about the number of users that we see. And we think we should have billions of monthly active users as a result of this.
Yeah, I mean, I'll confess, for the last several years, even before the pandemic, I always used to be concerned about, you know, how can you grow double-digit users for an extended period of time? This needs to, you know, come to an end one of these days. But frankly speaking, the Express product has done such wonders for you. Why didn't you guys think of that before? I mean, it's a fairly recent product, right?
It is. And, you know, it's interesting. You know, there's a lot of, you know, with everything going on, in software, there are a lot of different vectors that companies go after, and we do a lot of experimentation. Express has been in market in its current form for about a year and a half, along those lines. But what's fascinating about it is that it's really been developed for probably 6 or 7 years. And what I mean by that is we have had, you know, different attempts at mobile applications. We've had different attempts at web applications. All of that learning and some of that technology is what's underpinning Express. And as you know, getting the user journey right and learning from, you know, previous attempts to get figure out exactly what audiences are, exactly what they want to do. So there's been, you know, probably 5 years of solid learning that led to it. And this is really the culmination of all that stuff. But it's been off to a great start. We just shared that, you know, just in the last year, Express users have more than doubled the number of things that they've created and exported. And so we continue to see a lot of growth in that business.
No, no doubt about it. Another question I get a lot, actually, over the last few years has been how to think of the business versus in terms of enterprise versus consumer. Because I think the logic for investors is that the enterprise business probably is a lot more stickier and safer towards any Gen AI encroachments than the consumer business. First of all, if you have any information, please share. If not, how do you counter that argument?
Since I got here and going back to the time we were talking about with Macromedia, we've always had, you know, products that start with free all the way through to products that that we work with, you know, as a solution for an organization that, do business in the tens of millions of dollars a year. So, you know, as a company, we're well tuned to have this sort of this real focus end to end. On the enterprise side, you know, as you've pointed out, we do have a really remarkable footprint and set of relationships, both with creative, but also with our document products and with our digital experience products. So we are really an end-to-end solution for anyone that in an enterprise that wants to participate and create, you know, more personalized content and engage their users. And so that's been an area that we've made a lot of progress and a lot of announcements, and we've brought generative AI directly into that mix. On the consumer side, again, we have, you know, well over half a billion monthly active users of Acrobat. We have and Reader. We have over half a billion monthly active users of our creative products across the board. And we have a very finely tuned, data-driven model for making sure that the use cases and the value that we're developing finds its way in an educational, informative, and hopefully entertainment way to users, whether it's on social or whether it's through search. And we expose them to the kinds of things they can do. So that funnel that we've developed over the years and the product-led growth motion lets us really play effectively both at the bottoms-up motion for consumers and hobbyists and at the top-down motion for enterprises.
So when you look at the growth of the segment in the past 3 years, you know, what portion of that would you attribute to user growth, increase in average revenue per user or more usage, and then pricing?
Yeah, so the vast majority of the growth always is. Going back to the core point that you started with, our primary focus and function is about user growth. You know, as I mentioned, you know, we're over 500 million monthly active users for Creative, and over 500 million for our Document Cloud business. But I also said earlier, we believe there should be billions of monthly active users using our product. So that gives you a little bit of an indicator that we see a lot of headroom in terms of user adoption and user growth. And if you look at the growth that we post, you know, that growth primarily comes from new user adoption. We've also said, for example, on the last earnings call, that we added more new commercial subscriptions than ever before. So new users coming in continue to be important. We've also said that the mix is shifting. We continue to see growth in the core creative, pro creative users, but we're seeing more non-creative professionals coming in and using our products. By the way, both our flagship apps like Photoshop and Illustrator and Premiere, but also, you know, the new capabilities with Express as an example. So user growth is by far the most important focus and function for us. The other two areas, yes, we have, been increasing the value as we've embedded, for example, generative AI into all of our flagship products as part of Creative Cloud. We've made some pricing and ARPU uplifts there. We've also, on the other side, been driving more freemium motions. And so overall, ARPU has been stable. Overall, retention rates have been stable, and the foundation of the business is solid. But the other part that I would say that I think people sometimes miss, because they think of us as a P times Q business, right? The price for the products and the quantity of products that we sell. We have in the digital media business an emerging and very exciting opportunity around value-based selling. And that really comes in the context of Firefly services, our generative AI services that are sold, you know, in a for automation and embedded experiences in existing enterprise accounts. So it's both. It's going to be continue to drive the quantity. It's about maintaining the price by both, you know, increasing value at the high end and making it more affordable and more onboardable at the low end, but also by doing more of solution selling to enterprises.
No, that's an excellent answer. Now, let's jump onto generative AI. Now, this has been the biggest topic of conversation for us and clients in the last 12 months. You know, I cannot tell you I've addressed more questions on Adobe in the last 6 months than any other company. Now, this marks the 1 year anniversary of Firefly, which is the Adobe's family of creative generative AI models. So tell us about how this is impacting your approach for the entire digital media business.
You know, we have often been able to leverage, the latest trends and frankly help catalyze markets around this. But I don't think we've ever invested as much as we are, as you can imagine, with generative AI. For those of your listeners who don't know, Firefly is our foundation models for media content creation. So, text to image is, I think, what most people think about and focus on. We have text to image creation. We also have the ability to go text to vector, which is a format that a lot of designers use. We have the ability to do text to design, so create a full layout and design, text to text effects and fonts. So you can create, a floral font, or you can create, a font of, machinery or whatever. So you really have the ability to create and generate across the spectrum. And we have, already said that we will, by the end of this year, have support for audio, video, and 3D as well. So that Firefly foundation has been really important, and we've provided the team with everything they need from GPUs and the ability to go hire the best people in the world. So we're very excited about those foundation models. Beyond that, though, we've been focused on not just the training of the models, but how those models get into all of our surfaces. They're into surfaces like Photoshop and Illustrator and Express and Substance 3D as examples. They're available standalone on firefly.adobe.com. They're available in our document product. So Acrobat has AI Assistant now, so you can have a conversation with the document. And they're available to our enterprise customers through our DX products as well. So it's been a huge focus of ours, as you can imagine.
Yeah, and as you can imagine, every time I see some open source large language model come up in the market and, you know, we see the stock fluctuating, I get so many phone calls. Like, how do you respond to that when, you know, something like that happens? How do you go out and say, well, we have a similar technology that will, you know, either show up sooner or later, and that will help you protect, you know, the core of creative?
Yeah, I think a few things. And it's a really important question, because I think this is one where, from my view, I don't think people have really internalized the story fully. So first and foremost, if you look at, you know, what we have done, you know, and I think past performance is a indicator of future success. The track record that we've had in terms of the number of models that we've shipped, not just talked about, these are not, you know, research papers, these are in people's hands, have been phenomenal, right? So we have more creative models than anyone has in market out there. Second, we're getting incredible usage. I mean, we've had over 6.5 billion images generated, as an example, across these models. So we're very excited about the usage that we're getting. Third, the usage is coming not just because the models exist, but because we've integrated them into the workflows and how people use. So we feel very good about the fact that we're able to create these models, we're able to integrate these models into our tools and capabilities and drive utilization. And as new models come out with audio, video, and 3D, I think you can bet that the same thing's going to happen with them. The second part, though, that is very important to understand, is that we are very interested in working with third-party models as well. And what I mean by that is, for example, a few weeks ago, Sora came out. It's an amazing technology. It's also, based on the research that they published, very consistent with the technology we're building. Whatever happens with Sora, the more successful Sora is, the more video clips are created. And then ultimately, those clips have to get assembled. They have to get turned into something that is a finished product. And people are bringing that into Premiere. Same thing's happening. You know, we are doing very well with text to image. We're not the only text to image model out there. Then one of the top things people do when they use Adobe or when they use another model for text to image is they bring the image into Photoshop to finish and edit. So these things are not mutually exclusive. We can have a rich environment of models that include Adobe and third parties. And we can have a rich ecosystem of tools that benefit and actually creates a tailwind around that.
No, definitely. I always say that more content means more editing. Let's talk a little bit about AI monetization. This is another big point. I feel, you know, this is just my viewpoint, and we saw some extreme controversy about it in the last earnings call. And, for me, it's all right to get as many users to use the product first and then worry about monetization and let that be, you know, next year or the year after. So, but that's just, you know, my personal view. How do you handle these two things? Because obviously the street wants you to monetize it a little bit quicker. And while I think you guys want the acceptance rate or the usage rate to go up quite a bit.
Yeah, a few things here that are important. We've been very clear from the beginning, even as we launched the models and last October, I couldn't have been clearer that our primary focus is about building the best product and getting it in the hands of as many people as we can. And we believe that this is one of those moments that we need to focus on that. And whether it's, you know, leveraging, our freemium models, or whether that's being generous in terms of the number of things people can create before they have to pay us incremental amounts. All of that is on strategy, and we've been very consistent about that strategy. And we believe that we're in a really unique position, given the fact that we have the training data, given the fact that we have the models, and given the fact that we have the interfaces that people use to actually produce content of value. We feel like we're in a very unique position, and we want to leverage that position by getting proliferation of our products and our technology. So that continues to be a core focus. The second thing is we have put out, I think, a very clear framework for how we want to monetize these capabilities. First, you know, as we insert and create this these models and to integrate them into the flows of our product, it gives us the opportunity to create higher tiers of our products. That I think is going to be a source of monetization. We've also, you know, announced that that we have for the lower tiers, we have and actually all tiers, we have different levels of generation packs, the number of credits people can use. And while people are using and creating images today, when they create video, they'll be using even more generations. As we integrate it more throughout our products and users are using those capabilities more and getting more value out of it, these generation packs will start to come into their own. Third, with AI assistant in Acrobat, we've also been clear that that's another monetization vehicle. And the goal there, the expectation there will be that will be a different mechanism by which we can charge not just for Q&A and conversational interfaces around Acrobat users, but for the very first time, we can now offer conversational users to the half a billion free monthly active users that use Reader. So it's a Reader monetization opportunity that we're excited about. And then last, but certainly not least, you know, in the enterprise, we have the opportunity to monetize these with Firefly services, which is API access to not just our generative models, but our generative models along with API access to Photoshop and Illustrator and Premiere for the finishing. So you can automate the whole process. And that is that's based on volume of usage and the number of API calls that will scale with the amount of content that they create. And then the last thing is we do have these capabilities of Firefly integrated all the way into GenStudio, which is our digital experience product as well. So many surface areas of monetization. Part of it, though, is that right now it really is a focus on user acquisition. We've also said that we expect to see the monetization start to play out more in the back half of the year, and we'll continue to provide color as that happens.
Perhaps give a little more detail on GenStudio. I don't think a lot of people understand that particular aspect of Adobe.
Yeah, a very exciting new set of things coming out from here. There are really two things that I think are worth understanding. The first is Firefly Services, and the second is GenStudio. So Firefly Services is basically low-code, no-code, and API access to everything that we do. So if you want to generate an image, or if you want to generate some vectors, if you want to generate a design, if you want to do generative fill and actually edit an image using generative capabilities, ultimately, if you want to generate a video, if you want to auto dub and lip sync an existing video from English to pick your language that you want to distribute it in, all of those things are available through API calls now. And it's been an incredible to see the reaction from enterprises. In particular, if you think about enterprises, they've been using and viewing generative AI as this incredible technology that's sitting in the playground. But the ability now to get on a platform is what they want to do. They need to start actually figuring out how to use these technologies. And that's what Firefly Services does, is it gives them the ability to take this stuff and deploy it in a way that they can really change the workflows in the organization. And the interest and demand there has been, through the roof. GenStudio is basically an entire solution from Adobe and a product from Adobe that lets you manage your entire content supply chain from how you ideate on content to how you create content to how you create segmentations for how you want to match the content to audiences, to how you distribute that content, how you measure the efficacy of that content. So that's an entire ecosystem. And it's built on top of, as you can imagine, Firefly services. So customers can either buy Firefly services and integrate it into their existing workflows and solutions, or they can buy just GenStudio that gives you the best of everything we've been doing with Firefly services and other products in our digital experience group to run the interface and be an end-to-end solution for you.
Yeah, I was going to come to that. So it actually takes assets from the digital experience business also, and it's a platform that sits on top of both the segments then.
Exactly, including products that have been doing very well, like workflow management with Workfront, a review process with Frame, including a number of the other products, and works well with Journey Optimizer. So it really is the best of Adobe in effect for marketers and digital engagement.
All right. So before we switch to Document Cloud, let's talk about how Adobe is addressing content authenticity. A few months ago, we had Dana Rao on our podcast and talk a lot about what's happening over there. But, can you let us know how you guys are facing the initiative, elections, everything that goes into this issue of, image authenticity?
Yeah, this is something we've taken very seriously from the beginning, as you know, and this is maybe the single point of differentiation, biggest point of differentiation for Firefly, and I think it's a story that frankly needs to be told more. Everything about Firefly and our approach to authenticity started years ago in terms of how we think about it. First of all, one thing I do want to call out is Firefly, our models, are built on content that we have full license rights to and the ability and or the ability to use through open licenses. So we are very transparent about the data we train on. And that is something that I think is important to a lot of individuals and certainly to a lot of companies as they're focused on making sure that the content and that's being generated out of these models are not generated accidentally on their competitors' data or their own data that's been ripped off. So the way we train the models is truly safe for commercial use and focused on that. The second thing on top of that, though, is that when content is created, we see the need to make sure that there's authenticity associated with it. So it used to be the old adage is if you read something, check your source. But but seeing is believing, right? That is no longer the case. We all need to live in a world where we have to be very thoughtful about interpreting everything we see. So the Content Authenticity Initiative was started about 5 years ago. This was Adobe trying to do this. This is before generative AI. It was because Photoshop was being used in a lot of these manipulated images. We created this authenticity initiative that really tracks the provenance of a piece of content all the way from cradle to grave. And so we've worked with now, we have over 2,000, maybe close to 2,500 partners. They include hardware manufacturers. So if you're a camera manufacturer, when you take a picture, there's a little bit of an attribution and digital fingerprint put into the file. If that file then comes into Photoshop where it gets manipulated, we inject in what was the manipulation that people did there. And then if it goes into some generative AI process with Firefly, we'll also inject what those changes are so that by the time it gets to the consumer, that piece of content has an end-to-end nutrition label that they can look at and say, how was all of this done? And should I believe what I saw? Or has it also been changed? And I can then make my own interpretation. So that's been an effort that we've been working on. We have over 2,000 industry partners. We've been working with regulators to try and sort of shape regulation that supports something like this. And we're very optimistic that we'll get there. This society needs a solution like this. And we just want to make sure that we and others approach all of this responsibly.
No, fair point. All right, so let's switch over to Document Cloud. Now, we all know during the pandemic, a lot of these products saw some massive pull forward in demand. What I've been surprised about it's still been growing strongly even after that. So perhaps, give us a give us a sense of what are the big growth drivers for this particular product family.
PDF is a phenomenal format that has continued to grow. I mean, it's about it's 40 years old. And if you look at, trends on PDF, there are more people searching for, more people using, more people generating PDFs than ever before. There are trillions of PDFs in the world. It's become the de facto standard for the world's unstructured data, right? And that's a really profound sort of realization. I think people need to take a moment and think about that. You know, we have our structured data and databases and data lakes and these things, but everything unstructured effectively resides at some point in a PDF file format. And so we benefit from that, of course, as the maker of PDF and the most trusted set of products on PDF. So that's been a really, interesting tailwind for us. But beyond that, we've been very actively evolving the product set. You know, PDF and Acrobat used to be primarily a desktop destination and format. We have, mobile users now. We've, I think, shared in the past that mobile monthly active users has crossed 100 million. We just also announced that our web usage has gone through the roof. That also just crossed 100 million monthly active users, growing at 70% a year. So we see these incredible opportunities to take PDF and make it more usable and more approachable across all of these surfaces. So that's been a big point of growth. The second thing is we've really enabled better and better collaboration on it. So whether you're a small business using PDF to send it out for signature, or if you're a knowledge worker using PDF to send out a link that multiple people can comment on as opposed to sending out an attached PDF, that's created these intentional and unintentional growth loops that drive the business and by creating value from the act of sharing. And that's been a really productive flow for us, and that's driving top of funnel. And now what I can't wait, and already have seen through the public beta, the feedback, I can't wait to start to grow all of the things associated with AI Assistant. And that lets you have a conversation, because again, this is unstructured data. If you want to get data out of that unstructured data and you can just ask a question and get it, and you can then say, now write me an email for this and start the email, it's just an amazing way to take the power of PDFs and broaden it even beyond that.
Yeah, I mean, I must say, competitively, I have been surprised to see how well it's done, only because, we follow DocuSign as well, and their growth rate has not come back to that same level. And on the other side, I just signed, I think a few months ago, my first Adobe sign digitally. So how is that evolving, and what are your thoughts about platform versus point products?
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, one of the things people want to do is they want to have streamlined workflows. The thing we did a couple years ago that I think has been very productive for us is we have Adobe Sign, and we continue to sell that to enterprises and mid-market businesses, and it's been a productive business for us. But one of the things we did a few years ago is to say, look, the majority of people in the world actually want to do and transact signatures, but they're doing it through Acrobat. So why not take Adobe Sign and turn it into Acrobat Sign in effect and integrate it into the Acrobat workflows. And that's been a huge benefit to sort of getting this proliferated out, putting it where people really want it, and embedding it into that entire experience so that when you're creating a contract in Acrobat, you can also just say send for signature. That's what consumers want. That's what users want. And it was a good decision that has really played out well for us.
No, fair point. This is an area where I think there'd be a lot of fun Gen AI applications. Perhaps you could share some examples that you're already seeing people use with Acrobat and Gen AI, and what do you envision could happen in terms of the use cases down the road?
Yeah, it's been fascinating because it is one of these things that's so broad that we've had to be more focused on identifying the use cases and getting it to people. We've been using AI Assistant and Acrobat at Adobe for about 6 months now. and a number of really interesting use cases that we've seen. Product managers, as an example, are taking transcripts from Teams or Zoom or whatever meeting that they're having, and sharing the transcript around as PDF so that people can have conversations around the conversations that happen in the meetings. So people open it up and are able to do that. We've seen our BDR teams, our sales teams, actually using generative AI and AI assistant in Acrobat to download, if they're selling to a company, downloading information about the company, including their 10K, and having that effectively help them write, and a personalized script or create a personalized, content that needs to be created. And the great thing about this is that AI assistant is focused on the document set that you give it. And so it's very focused on what you want, and hallucinations are lower, accuracy rates are higher. And then lastly, at home, it's been interesting to watch my daughter, where I'm very mindful in terms of how much she uses or what she uses it for. But she will, if there are three or four different papers that she needs to read, she'll pull them in and ask AI assistant, what are some differences between these papers? And so the education use case is also very interesting. And the last thing is, you can also have fun with it. I took our earnings script, I think it was 2 quarters ago, and had it written as a poem in rhyme with some humor. And so, there's such a broad set of capabilities, but the power of this is the AI assistant is focused on one or more documents that you are asking it to talk to you about, so which has been great.
Yeah, so taking 10Ks and Qs and writing about it, you're going to take my job out very soon, David. All right, so the last question I have in our discussion is, this is a question I ask everybody who's on the cutting edge of technology. So there are two elements. You have the large language models, and you have companies that own large amount of data. Who's going to be the winner in the end? The one with the best large language model, or the language model becomes a commodity and the person with the widest data set?
I think there are going to be three parts to this. So I think you're right, which is the data set is going to matter a lot. We can't train anything without a data set. The second is about the large language models that you build on that data set. And the third is really around the domain expertise and the workflow understanding, right? And so, for example, in the context of Adobe, we have a large data set. We have different ways we're working with our own foundation models and third party large language models, but we also have a deep understanding of the workflow around marketing and digital experience, right? And so that mix of things, I think, really creates a durable differentiation and opportunity for us. Between the two, I genuinely think the access to the data set's going to matter more and more. And here's why. I think a lot of the research around large language models is frankly becoming more and more available. So the data set matters more, and it'll be interesting to see what the governments end up deciding in terms of what you're allowed to train on. I think for large language models, having a backstop where you own a lot of data, I think is going to be fundamentally an advantage in the long term, because you need a lot of data to be able to train on that.
All right. So at least we are aligned on one more thing. That's good. David, thank you so much for coming on. It's been a pleasure, and we look forward to having you back a year from now.